It should come as no surprise that a congressional bill dealing with genetically modified foods has become the focus of controversy. Pretty much anything having to do with GMO can raise a ruckus. So it is with House of Representatives Bill 1599, H.R. 1599. It is called the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act of 2015, and the House passed it 2 weeks ago, sending it to the Senate. People for it and against it agree that the bill would affect GMO food labels if it becomes law. Some of the finer points are a source of dispute. Among those are what the bill says about or does to local measures on GMO, like Jackson County's ban on GMO crops. First, let's hear from Gail Greenman, who's the Director of National Affairs at the Oregon Farm Bureau. Gail, thanks for joining us on The Exchange today.
Thank you so much for having me, Jeff.
What is the general view at the Farm Bureau on growing of GMO crops?
Well, the general view is that it's a necessary part of agricultural production. We believe in organic production, GMO production, conventional production. We're a general ag organization that supports all of our farmers and all of their production methods.
All right, so pretty much anything goes. I mean, if people are growing it, then it should be okay.
As long as it's legal.
As long as it's legal. Okay, you took a stance at the Farm Bureau against Jackson County's GMO crop ban, is that right?
That's correct.
On what basis?
We felt that it was a really important part of the economy down there, that it certainly didn't affect producers who chose not to grow GMO crops, but it would have a great effect on those producers and our producer members who did grow GMO crops.
And does the Farm Bureau have a position on the labeling of GMO products?
Yes, we do. We are opposed to labeling, but we are very supportive of H.R. 1599, as you mentioned earlier.
All right. Lay us out, in your mind, what the general tenets of H.R. 1599 are.
Sure. It creates a uniform science-based labeling standard. It protects consumers. We do know that there would be increased costs for food. And in recent studies, I think they last year, 2014, a Cornell University study found that the labeling of mandatory labeling could cost consumers upwards of $500 a year in food for an average family of four. It removes uncertainty from the marketplace. It's important to remember that these initiatives or federal mandatory GMO labeling legislation include exemptions and carve-outs. It promotes an important and safe technology that's backed by the World Health Organization, the American Medical Association, the National Academy of Sciences. There are nearly 2,000 independent peer-reviewed studies that back up these findings. And it also establishes a national GMO-free certification program that would be administered by the Department of Agriculture and would look a lot like the National Organic Program in terms of the way that it's structured.
But and so national GMO certification program, and how would the standards be arrived at for achieving that certification?
Well, USDA would outline those would be done not only in the legislation, but they would also promulgate those through a rule, but it would be a voluntary voluntary label that food producers and food companies could opt into should they want to. If their marketplace decision says to them that this would be a good business decision.
The labeling could be allowed then, but not required. Is that right?
That's right. It would be a voluntary non-GMO label, as opposed to a mandatory GMO label.
Mandatory non-GMO. So you'd identify that this is a non-GMO product.
That's right. That's what the program would do.
Okay. So an opt-in instead of an opt-out. They're only by the feds, or would the states be allowed to do something here?
No, this would prevent local measures or state measures. Obviously, we've seen both. This would prevent any state from doing their own labeling standards.
All right. So no state could do its own labeling standards.
Correct.
All right. Now, the issue of the cost, I've heard this one talked up and down a bunch of times from a bunch of different directions. There are those people who point out that in Europe there's a lot of labeling requirements on GMO products, and it doesn't appear to have done much of anything to the cost of food.
Well, I think in this country we can look at regulations in general, whether they be on food labeling or other regulations. Any additional regulatory burden has a cost associated with it, and ultimately, usually the consumer is the one who pays that cost. So in the case of GMO, mandatory GMO labeling, that process starts at the farm. It starts with separate bins, separate storage facilities, and works its way all the way up until it gets to the marketplace. So how wouldn't it have an increase in cost?
Well, after a while, I mean, you're doing things a certain way, that cost gets smoothed out over time, doesn't it?
I don't think so, because you still have to have those processes in place. You still have to have the separate structures, the separate facilities, presumably separate staff handling the different ingredients or the different crops, I guess, in this case.
Gail Greenman's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Director of National Affairs for the Oregon Farm Bureau. We're talking about H.R. 1599, just passed the U.S. House of Representatives about a week and a half ago. The Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act of 2015 now goes on to the Senate. Some disagreements about what it would do. You heard, obviously, food labeling becomes a voluntary thing and only at the federal level, and no states could pass laws. A lot of disagreement about particularly local law preemption. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your questions or comments at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So this question of preemption, then, about whether or not Jackson County's GMO ban and any other similar things, what's the position at the Oregon Farm Bureau?
Sure. Well, we're really talking about the Interstate Commerce Clause, which if you read H.R. 1599, it's mentioned several times. And what the Interstate Commerce Clause says is you can't negatively affect the free flow of goods and services between the states. The Jackson County cultivation ban on GMO crops doesn't violate the Interstate Commerce Clause. It's a county ban on the cultivation of a GMO crop. If the county banned, for instance, the transportation, it said, trucker, farmer, you cannot transport GMO crops through our county to get to, let's say, California, so wherever their destination may be. If the county banned the transportation of that, and whether it be the transportation of a GMO crop or the end product that contains GMOs through its borders as they make their way to market, that may very well be a violation of the Interstate Commerce Clause. But again, the cultivation ban does not harm the free flow of goods and services from state to state and remains strictly a county issue. The other part that I would say is HR, you know, or in terms of GMOs, is that we know that it has a benefit to our environmental footprint. We know that the cost will remain somewhat the same as opposed to a mandatory labeling where we believe the cost would increase. But perhaps the biggest impact on GMO production is the alleviating hunger and malnutrition around the world. We know that 1 in 8 people suffer globally from hunger and malnutrition. And we also know that by 2050, which is not that far off, 35 years away, our population is expected to rise to 9 billion people, and we predict that we'll need 70% more agricultural production to keep pace. So if you just take that in the confines of Oregon and you look at our hunger problem in Oregon, why on earth would we raise food costs for the most needy? In 2013, USDA reported that Oregon retailers redeemed $1.2 billion in food stamps, up from $366 million in 2003. Current figures show that 1 in 5 Oregonians, or 20%, receive food assistance. And this isn't an issue with the SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or any other food assistance program. They are necessary, and they absolutely have their place. But let's look at how many people in Oregon utilize that food assistance, and we have a really big hunger problem in this state. And I am not in favor of any, and Farm Bureau is not in favor of anything that would raise those food prices on the people who need it most.
But a lot of times there really is no way to resist raising food prices. For example, when energy costs go up, I mean, and I've watched, for example, what's been happening with a couple of years ago when fuel prices got so high. I mean, everything on the grocery store shelves seemed to get more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, so there are points at which you don't have much control anyway. If we're talking about just a couple of cents, isn't this a little better than dealing with the externalized costs of people's concerns for what GMO might do to them?
Well, the legislation would provide a voluntary non-GMO label that, again, businesses will make a marketplace decision and decide for themselves whether they think it's best or not. But, yeah, and the other point is I do think it's more than a couple of cents. So if we're looking at your area, which is presumably the 2nd Congressional District and the 4th Congressional District.
Correct.
Congressman Walden and Congressman DeFazio, if you look at those figures, I mean, there is an immense amount of hunger, not only in their congressional districts, but all around the state. So in Congressman Walden's Congressional District, we have 305,000 households. 65,640 households received food assistance. Of those 65,000, nearly 25% had one or more people over the age of 60, and nearly 48% had children under the age of 18. Now, if you go to the 4th Congressional District, out of 310 households, 68,872 households received SNAP assistance. Nearly 28% had an adult over the age of 60, at least one adult over the age of 60, and nearly 45% had children under the age of 18. So, yeah, when we're talking about whether it be a few cents or a few dollars, I believe it to be more than that. I think it is critical that we keep food prices down, and I do agree with you that there are things that we can't control, whether they be energy, whether they be transportation. In some cases, they're obviously one and the same, but, you know, I have a family of four. I have two children who are 4 and 6. I'm pretty cognizant of food prices in and around, at least obviously, the Portland metro area, and it is expensive. I make 20 lunches a week, and I cook about 6 meals a week, so I do have a pretty good grasp on what food is. It is expensive. I can feel myself lucky that I don't need a food assistance, and I never have been on food assistance, but I feel and care for the people that do. And if you look at June 2015 figures that were released from the Oregon Department of Human Services, in June of 2015, $96.3 million came into the state for SNAP assistance. So clearly we have a hungry population. And, you know, again, I don't think voluntarily raising those costs on them is a good thing.
SNAP being the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, Food Stamps Oregon Trail, it's called in Oregon. Gail Greenman, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Director of National Affairs for the Oregon Farm Bureau. We're talking about H.R. 1599 in the U.S. House, which has already passed the House, the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act of 2015. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Mark in Reading. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. Is it a fact that the federal government started the Farm Bureau as a way to have a conservative counterpoint to the Grange, which was considered quite radical at the time? Or if that's not the case, who did start the Farm Bureau and for what reason?
Okay, interesting history question. Thanks for that, Mark. Gail, what do you got?
Sure, absolutely. So as you know, the Farm Bureau at the national level is called the American Farm Bureau Federation. Federation is really the key word in that because that means our policy comes from the grassroots and all comes from the bottom all the way to the top. So the grassroots really form that policy. The Farm Bureau was formed in Broome County, New York in 1919, and it was, you know, out of concern for not only agricultural policy but some market decisions and some local issues at the time. So, no, it had nothing to do with the federal government. The reason it's called Bureau and often gets mistaken for being part of the federal government or being started by the federal government is because it was an offshoot at the time in New York of the Chamber of Commerce.
All right. Thanks for that. Let's go to Gail and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Gail Greenman from the Oregon Farm Bureau.
Hello. Good morning.
Hi.
I think Gail misses the entire point of the Seralini study, which was challenged. And it has been thrice vetted, and it has been republished, showing that GMO maize with Roundup, had a very, very detrimental, damaging, adverse effect on the lab rats on which it was administered, and showing gross tumor evidence, showing organ failure and sex-linked high death rates. Monsanto et al. Came out roaring against this study, and eventually the journal publisher rescinded it, only to have it be published again. And, I mean, a simple question for Gail might be, why do you think the European Union chooses not to allow GMO into Europe?
All right. Let's leave it at that. Thanks for that, Gail. Appreciate it. Are you familiar with the Seralini study, Gail Greenman?
I have to say that I am not, but what I hear the comment or the question being is really an issue of pesticides, not GMO. I heard Gail mention Roundup. So, you know, again, there are pesticides used on conventional crops, on GMO crops. There are also pesticides, and I think it's somewhat misunderstood. There are organic pesticides. So the term organic food does not necessarily mean pesticide-free. And I think that's always an important point to make, but I am not familiar with the study.
All right. We have another call here from Archie in Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Gail Greenman from the Oregon Farm Bureau.
Hi. GMO crops can be sprayed directly with Roundup, which contains glyphosate. Glyphosate takes the capability of the minerals in the plant to be absorbed by the human body. So it's more like eating straw. This is kind of a pointless thing. You're buying a product that looks like a real vegetable, but it contains minerals that cannot be digested because the binding of the GMO of the Roundup and the glyphosate with the minerals makes that impossible. So you're going to be starving people if you give everybody GMO plants that are legally sprayed with insecticide and herbicide like Roundup.
All right. Thanks for that, Archie. Appreciate that. Gail, a response?
Yeah, well, I would say that GMO crops have been prevalent in our country for more than 20 years. I think there's a basic difference of opinion. But whether or not you believe GMOs to be unsafe, which obviously there are people who do believe it, or you believe it's a right-to-know issue, or both, why would you support an initiative in Oregon that's obviously Measure 92 or federal legislation, the mandatory labeling legislation, both of which provide numerous exemptions and one of those exemptions is for cafeterias. So cafeterias would be inclusive of schools. They would be inclusive of nursing homes. You're talking about the youngest of the young, the oldest of the old, and arguably the most vulnerable of the population. So if you're supportive of Measure 92, if you're supportive of mandatory labeling legislation, you're supportive of these type of exemptions, which I think are incomplete and cause confusion for the consumer.
So you're saying an argument against mandatory labeling is that it doesn't go far enough?
I don't believe that there should be mandatory labeling, but for those that do, why would you support that type of legislation?
Once again, Gail Greenman, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll take a couple more minutes with her to talk about the effects of H.R. 1599. It's the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act of 2015, passed the House on July 23rd and went on to the Senate. A lot of questions about what it does to GMO, particularly within states, and what it does to state and local laws. Some disagreement about that. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760. Anywhere in our listening area, 800-838-3760, email address jx@jeffnet.org. So back to the preemption section, which seems to be the major point of contention, at least within Oregon, about the local effects here, whether or not, for example, it would deal with Jackson County's GMO crop ban. And I do see where it says that, you know, food and interstate commerce is affected by this. So I guess what you're saying is if the food doesn't leave the state of Oregon, then Jackson, any GMO crop, let me see if I can word this correctly. So Jackson County's GMO crop ban is not affected, but if it were to be placed upon any food that actually left the state of Oregon, it would be preempted.
No, the cultivation ban is just simply that. It's a cultivation ban. You can't grow GMO crops in Jackson County, and I think it was as of May 20th or June and some date of this year. So you just can't grow it. It has nothing to do with whether it goes into food or not. That does not affect the Interstate Commerce Clause. As I said earlier, if Jackson County said trucker or farmer who's coming from the Willamette Valley, you're going through Jackson County on your way to California, and Jackson County said, okay, you can't come through our county. You physically cannot drive through our county because you have GMO crops or an end product with GMO crops in it. That might be a violation of interstate commerce. But a simple cultivation ban is just that. It's a cultivation ban. Jackson County voters have decided that they don't want GMO crops grown in their county. They had that right, and they voted on it, and they made their decision. And that's where it ends. I would point your attention to the July 17th comment by Chairman Michael Conaway and Ranking Member Colin Peterson on H.R. 15. They said, a centerpiece of H.R. 1599, the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act of 2015, authored by Representatives Pompeo and Butterfield and co-sponsored by 106 members, including ourselves, is to avoid the patchwork of state laws dealing with biotech food labeling. The bill that the House of Representatives will soon consider provides preemption solely for food use and labeling. The preemption provision does not delve into areas beyond this, such as cultivation of crops. That's coming directly from the chairman and ranking member of the United States House of Representatives Agriculture Committee.
All right, another call here from Lucy in Mendocino. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Gail Greenman from the Oregon Farm Bureau.
Good morning. I have a problem with labeling in that I label things because I'm proud of what's in the ingredients. I'm proud of my product. Why are you not proud of GMO products?
We are very proud of it, but for the reasons that I've stated, we don't believe that it should be mandatory. We don't believe there should be a mandatory labeling of it.
All right, so the effect then is that what you end up with under this bill is a voluntary system where you can label your product GMO-free once some standards are set, but no state laws about labeling can be passed if this is were to be passed by the Senate.
Well, passed by the Senate and signed by the President, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But just like we label organic products because there's a certification program to go through the United States Department of Agriculture, we don't label non-organic products as conventional. We label them as what they are. They're carrots. They're peas. Take any one of thousands of products. They're just labeled as what they are. If they're organic, they have a special certification label.
All right. So the idea being that the market eventually sets things. If people like the non-GMO products, they buy the non-GMO products. More people might want to produce non-GMO products.
That's right. And by doing that, you're not increasing the cost of food on, again, the people who need it the most.
Gail, I have to believe there are some interesting and warm discussions within the Oregon Farm Bureau, considering all the farmers you represent, given that they're in many different attitudes about GMO.
There are, I would say, as a whole and as an organization, stance on it. Again, as a federation, our policy bottom up. The policy process begins at the county level.
All right. We will take this up again, I'm sure. In fact, we'll take up the other side of this on the other side of Garrison Keillor. Gail Greenman is the Director of National Affairs for the Oregon Farm Bureau. Thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today.